A few months after being able to solve their one-year-old son Rio's hearing problems, Vicki Stevens and Don McCarthy began to notice other troubling health signs that Rio was experiencing, including the loss of appetite, limping instead of walking, and his energy dwindling. After being hospitalized in their local hospital in Surrey, England for 12 days with no tangible results to speak of, Rio was transferred to St. George's Hospital, where he was finally diagnosed with stage 4 neuroblastoma in August of 2023. Vicki and Don will talk about what Rio has gone through both before and after his diagnosis and how Rio is doing today. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Vicki Stevens and Don McCarthy's one-year-old son, Rio, was having trouble hearing, but underwent a procedure in which his hearing improved. Unfortunately, however, there were other medical issues that began to plague Rio. Vicki and Don have joined me today to talk about the last 15 months or so, which led up to Rio's diagnosis of stage 4 neuroblastoma in August of 2023. And it is my pleasure to introduce Vicki and Don to my audience and welcome them to my podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Mark.
Now, as we go back to the late stages of 2022, as I said in my intro, Rio's hearing issues were identified as a condition known as glue ear, which I had not heard of before. What is glue ear? And after this situation was taken care of, were you both thinking that Rio should now be able to resume a normal and healthy life as he looked forward to becoming a toddler?
Yeah, definitely. So glue ear, he actually inherited it from Don. He had it as a child. One sec, darling. As a child. And sorry, Rio's promptly asking for something.
So it was something that was hereditary, gotten from me. I had it as a child. I went through a similar process of sort of instability, lack of hearing, nonverbal communication, and very slow development in speech. This is then something that we tried to go down the NHS, ended up being extremely difficult, and eventually we actually paid private to have his grommets put in and his adenoids removed back in January 23.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and right after that, was he okay? Or I guess the right question is, how long after this procedure did you notice that Rio's behavior had changed in that his appetite was dwindling and his energy level was decreasing?
After April.
So this year, after his birthday, 21st of April, that's when we sort of realized he started to change in habits. So his sleeping become very disjointed. He was having night sweats, and he had been in his own room from a very young age. We didn't need to settle him. We didn't have him in the bed. And all of a sudden, he started having these night terrors. Couldn't settle him in the bed. Couldn't get him to sleep on his own. He had to be in the bed with us. And sort of that's something that, you know, we never wanted as parents. We didn't want him to become uncomfortable with this, but there was no other way of getting him to sleep.
And he'd wake up numerous times a night.
Well, that must have really been very helpful to the two of you, as you had a lot to do. You also had your older daughter to take care of, so I'm sure there were some very unpleasant nights. But over the next 2 months, Rio went back and forth to you. You took him back and forth to your local hospital as he was having trouble wanting to eat. He was limping instead of walking.
Yeah. Rio had a massive appetite before. He'd eat adult-sized portion feeds. He'd never been what I class a typical child eater. He'd always like what my husband ate. Big portions, nice, solid food. He wasn't a snacker. So his food, out of nowhere, he just went from eating so healthy and such great portion sizes to being off food completely. So that was our first massive alarm, would you not say?
Yeah. So obviously most children become, our daughter even now is still quite picky in what she eats. But he would eat what I would cook for dinner.
He was never picky.
So I wouldn't have to cook something separate for him. Everything I ate, he would eat.
Well, certainly that must have been obviously very unsettling. He also had fevers, and then he was hospitalized for 12 days. What were the doctors at your local hospital saying about what they thought was the cause of these problems?
They thought he had a blocked kidney. So it was actually our second admission. I'd already taken him in July, at the beginning of July, and he was an inpatient for 3 nights. And they said he was anemic, and they put him on iron medicine. And I was challenging, why is he anemic? Like, why would a two-year-old be anemic? Because we'd originally taken him in then as well with a limp and the spikes of temperature and the loss of appetite. And he had lost a lot of weight. And they discharged us with his iron medicine. And I took him back 10 days later for that last day that we did 12 days because his stools wasn't even black. And I said, he's taking this medicine, but he's obviously not digesting it. Something's not right. And we had him back in there for 12 days and he was walking with a limp. He was spiking the temperatures. He was lethargic. He was pasty. He lost his nails where he was so malnourished. And they did ultrasounds. They did 7 in total. And they came to the conclusion that Rio had a blocked kidney. But he was having a high blood pressure at the time as well. His reading was 151, his highest, wasn't it? Over 90.
Yeah, that was it.
And we were challenging, saying, why would a two-year-old have a high blood pressure? Walking with a limp, all these symptoms. And they said that he had a blocked kidney, but we challenged it and we didn't believe this. All his symptoms were coming down to a blocked kidney. And thankfully, we asked to be transferred to a different hospital. And they did an ultrasound and same ultrasound. But within 1 minute, the guy detected Rio's 12x7 centimeter solid tumor. And he was fantastic. And he cancelled all his patients and took us straight down for a CT scan, which confirmed Rio did have a 12x7 centimeter solid tumor, which was, we later found out in that day, that they thought it was 99% sure neuroblastoma, but we had to wait for them to do a biopsy of the tumor and see if it had metastasized, because neuroblastoma is an aggressive childhood cancer, which the size of the tumor, they anticipated it was going to spread, which it had done.
Well, before we get to that, I just want to ask you a question. Now this was at St. George's Hospital where they did
St. George's detected it. Yeah.
Right. So that's a much bigger hospital than you were at. And my question is, before the diagnosis came, did either you or Dawn suspect that there might be a cancer situation at that time? So
we had asked them to test them for cancer.
Okay, so the diagnosis of which turned out to be stage 4 neuroblastoma, I don't know if that was a surprise to you, but at least a cancer diagnosis was not totally shocking.
It was, only because they had told me they ruled out the thought of cancer because they had done leukemia and blood cancers, and they said to me that Rio doesn't have cancer.
Well, unfortunately, first of all, he did have cancer. Secondly, there are other cancers beside the ones that the leukemia, what you were testing for.
So now, they had actually woke me up when we was the inpatients in the 12 days and said, Vicky, cancer's been ruled out, because I kept asking him to be tested for cancer, didn't I, Don?
Yeah.
And they kept saying, why are you asking us to test for cancer? I said, because Rio's deteriorated for too long. For me, he has too many worrying symptoms, but I'd never heard of neuroblastoma. If I had, I would have asked him to be testing for that. But I just said, something's wrong. In my head, I kept asking him, can you test for sarcoma? Because I knew it was a tumor. And the symptoms that he had when I was researching were similar to sarcoma too. And they were like, the test that we've done, your son hasn't got cancer. We believe he's got a blocked kidney. But for me, a blocked kidney wouldn't cause a high blood pressure. It wouldn't cause him not to eat. It wouldn't cause him to lose his fingernails. He had so many symptoms.
Well, The fact of the matter is, I guess I'm a little surprised because the hospital you were in is one of the biggest ones, where you live. And hopefully that not hopefully because you don't want to see it. But the fact is, I'm sure they've dealt with cancer before. And I believe there are over 100 pediatric cancers along with subtypes. So, to test for two cancers is not enough, of course. Now, stage four generally means that the cancer has spread. In Rio's case, can you talk about where his cancer had spread to? And finally, what were your doctors saying about his prognosis?
So Rio's tumor cancer had spread to his bone marrow and 27 spots of his skeleton frame, his skull, his pelvis, his spine, his femur, his shoulder.
Now, the fact that they basically had ruled out cancer, mm-hmm. is that saying that when the diagnosis came in, were they prepared at the hospital to handle this type of cancer now that they had diagnosed it?
They transferred us to an oncology hospital.
Okay. And was that done right away, pretty much?
So, unfortunately, not, because when we got the diagnosis on the 25th of August, we finally got it. It then was bank holiday weekend, and the medical system closes down at the weekend. So we got told this news at 6 o'clock on the Friday, and that they wouldn't be doing anything or giving us any more information until the Tuesday. But we had to stay in hospital, and obviously it was a massive shock because we had gone to George's thinking he had a blocked kidney, and then we got told he has a solid tumor. And even at that point, we didn't know 100% it was neuroblastoma because they weren't going to be able to do the biopsy until the Tuesday. And they said, but on Tuesday, when everything's back open, we're going to put a Hickman line in, which will then be for his chemotherapy line and for his medication. We'll do a tumor biopsy. We'll do a bone marrow aspiration to see if it had spread. We'll do an MRI scan to see if it's around the rest of his body. But myself and Don, we had to wait the 3 days with this information before anything could move forward. And then by the Tuesday, that all happened. But then we had to wait a further week for results to come in before we could even decide whether we could, what treatment we was going to start, depending on what stage Rio was at.
How frustrating was it? Not just the 3 days, which must have been absolutely terribly frustrating, but beforehand, when you were insisting that Rio be tested for cancer. And I can't tell you how many times that the mother is the one that pushes these doctors to do the proper testing because you knew instinctively.
Mm-hmm. I knew.
That there was definitely something amiss, and it was not a blocked kidney. It was the blocked kidney was part of the process.
His kidney wasn't even blocked. His kidney wasn't blocked. The tumor had squashed his stomach in half because it was that big. Because he's only two, his whole waist is only 17 centimeters. So you think 12 by 7 in his stomach, it squashed his kidney. That's what made it look blocked. His stomach was squashed in half. It was pushing down on his pelvis, which is why he was walking with the limp. It even pushed his spine over to the left side where the tumor was that big.
Okay, so Friday night, 6 o'clock, and then Tuesday morning, they were going to get back to work. And they were going to do the biopsy, and you had to wait another whole week till you got the diagnosis. Is that correct? So it was like 10 days, and you did not know at that time that he had the neuroblastoma stage 4.
No.
And did their doctors, did the diagnosis of the stage 4 come there, or had you already been, or were you going to be transferred to the oncology hospital where they were going to proceed further?
We got transferred. So we got the phone call. We had a Zoom call from our consultant the day before we left to go to the Marsden, wasn't it? And they said the biopsy had confirmed that it was neuroblastoma, and the bone marrow had come back that it had metastasized and was in Rio's bone. And we didn't know how many spots he had around his skeleton frame, because by then they knew he was going to be stage 4 and we had to start chemotherapy. So we had to wait a further few weeks to find out how many metastasis spots he had around his skeleton frame, didn't we?
Yeah.
Till he could have the MIGB scan, which is a special scan
for neuroblastoma.
Okay, so it was actually longer than 10 days. It was it went into several days or maybe weeks after that you could really settle the situation down and say, okay, we can now start treatment. And did the oncology doctors, I asked this question before about the other doctors, but did they sit down with you and say, look, he is metastasized to several different places. This is what we need to do. And this is what it looks like to us from here as far as treatment and the prognosis.
Yeah, they did.
And
when we arrived in the Marsden, they set us down and said the size of his tumor, going by the bone marrow, he was going to be stage 4. They told us for neuroblastoma children at prognosis, they have a 40 to 50% chance of survival rate for the 5 years. They said, we're still waiting for a gene testing from the biopsy of the tumor to come back to see if he was MYCN or alkalkified, which is a mutation of the tumor, which makes it more of aggressive cancer. She said, if that came back, it wouldn't change the treatment protocol, but it would change how Rio responds. And if you're MYCN or ALK, you've got a higher chance of relapse. And we started his treatment, and we're thankful Rio's not MYCN or ALK mutation.
Once you got to the oncology hospital that he was going to be treated at, did you at least feel more comfortable that they knew what to do than you did at St. George's, and at least that he was in the best place possible at the time?
I don't think I'll ever feel that with anyone when they've let my son down so much. I take it upon myself, and my husband does. We research every day for every part of treatment, for the best care, for nutrition, through supplements, down to the dosage. I don't have trust in any systems because they let him down massively.
Well, you were let down at a very, my assumption, I could be wrong, but my assumption is that St. George Hospital is a very well-known and respected facility. Am I correct?
To be fair, St. George's were the one who detected it. It was my local hospital. Okay. If it wasn't for St. George's, that's where I asked to be transferred for, Rio would never have been diagnosed. St. George's were incredible. It was my local hospital that had him for the 12 days and did the 7 ultrasounds that missed it.
Okay, so at least you're now in a place that you know is the right place to be. Mm-hmm. What type of frontline treatment was Rio to go through at that point? And how close are you now in a position that the next phase of his treatment has begun, or are you still in the first phase of treatment for him?
So he's completed 3 phases. He did induction chemotherapy called Rapid Coject, where it's 70 days of chemotherapy. So you have chemotherapy for 2 to 3 days, and then you have 7 days off, and then on day 10, you have it again. And they do that for 70 days, and then you have scans to see if you've responded. Because yet again, it's 50-50 if children respond to induction chemotherapy. Thankfully, Rio did respond very well, and he could move on to having his stem cells harvest. And then, because he responded well, he could move on to having his surgery, which he was luckily able to keep his kidney, which we didn't think he was going to be able to. And they removed 95% of the tumor that they could visibly see. But unfortunately, during that surgery, Rio had a rare complication where he got a bowel obstruction. So 7 days later, they had to reopen him back up and take the obstruction out of his bowel.
Has he moved on to the point where he's had any of the immunotherapy?
No, not yet. So he's just come out of high dose and stem cell transplant, where we did 9 weeks. And Rio got VOD, so it extended our stay, which is obviously poisoning of the liver. We've come out of high dose. We've been out now 2.5 weeks. And we are just waiting now. He starts radiation on the 2nd of April for 12 days. And then after that period, we'll have scans again, and then he moves on to immunotherapy.
Well, the immunotherapy, of course, is something that's fairly new and thankfully is available, because the chemotherapy treatments, of course, can be very difficult. So hopefully that will be a situation.
Very toxin. Well, and unfortunately for children in pediatric oncology, they don't get the funding or the research into kind of nicer treatment.
Now, you mentioned to me this morning that there's a vaccine which is being evaluated for neuroblastoma patients at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Does Rio want to say hello to me while we're on the podcast? Hi, Rio. How you doing? I'll tell you, I wish everybody could see him because he looks so adorable. He looks great. And whatever that is, that a tattoo? Oh, it's a scarf, I guess.
This is NG tube. It's where we put medicines down.
I understand. So back to this vaccine. It has an astronomical cost of $300,000 plus other considerations, I'm sure, as far as travel and everything else.
Yeah.
What have you heard about this vaccine? Is there a chance that Rio will qualify for this vaccine? And if so, with all the cost considerations involved, is there a realistic hope to come to the United States to participate in this vaccine, which I think is still in trial?
It's been in trial for about 10 years. The reason why they still say it's in trial is because they don't cover all the data. But I know families that have had it 8 years ago from the UK and their children are thriving. Do you know? So, yes, it's in trial, but it's been used for many years. And I've seen and heard of many success rates. So for Rio to qualify, he has to be NED, no evidence of disease at the end of frontline treatment. And also we have to have the money ready. With a deadline of 28 days once Rio's finished immunotherapy to get him straight to MSK.
Okay, so this drug would be after the immunotherapy and then after he's in good shape for several weeks. So it's not something that's right around the corner, but it's something that at least that you hopefully will be able to think about as time goes on.
Yeah, for me, it's the most important part of treatment to prevent relapse, because it trains the body. Don will talk to you more about the vaccine because he knows quite well about it. But the vaccine is Rio's best hope of not relapsing. Because if in England, if you relapse, the treatment, they've only got 5% success rate. But Don is going to go in and explain to you quite in depth about why the vaccine is very important.
Well, I really would like to hear about that, Don, because I know that, you know, relapse generally is the key to recovering much easier, of course, from from the neuroblastoma, especially when it's stage four.
Yeah, so the statistics in the UK at the moment are any child with high-risk neuroblastoma has a 51% chance of survival after 5 years. That's increased, luckily, over the last sort of 10, 15 years. But the problem is, if you do, unfortunately, relapse, your chance of survival drops to 5%. The immunotherapy that they do provide, it's only for neuroblastoma, it's not targeted. So the Biovent vaccine, the one that we're looking at, NMSK, it is designed specifically to attack the proteins that sit in the surface of the neuroblastoma cells. It was originally derived from another vaccine called HU3F8, which is something they come up with years ago using mouse cells. But this isn't specific enough for real. So for reals, the Biovent vaccine, it goes after the GD2 cells and the GD3s,
which was in his tumor.
Which is luckily in his tumor. And that's how we know that this particular treatment is what's going to work for Rio as opposed to any of the others that they supply. The idea is that you use these natural killing cells within the body to target these proteins produced by the cancer. And the issue that obviously we have, they just don't supply that in the UK. The the vaccine or the immunotherapy that you do get here, again, it's not specific enough. It's just a generic, and it doesn't train the body to actually fight off the cancer in the future, because the neuroblastoma sends off what they're calling is don't eat me signals. And the idea is that you train the body then to change those signals from don't eat me to eat me, so your body can naturally develop its own use of attacking the cancer.
Do you know what the percentage of success rate they've had here at in New York?
95% is the what they estimate that your chance of survival once you hit that 5 years is 95%.
95%. That's a lot better, I would say. And I'm not great at math, but it's a lot better than the 5% if you do relapse. It's a completely this is going to be a very naive question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is it possible for MSK to transfer the drug to England where it could be administered, or is that an impossible?
They are trying. They are currently in the, because obviously they want to push this out to the whole world. The problem is, obviously, you've got the FDA in America, and obviously each country around the world has its own medical association to look after these things. And as you can imagine, it's not as easy as just sending all this vaccine out. And as well, it's also a business. But it's then about having people trained by MSK all over the world to deliver the same treatment. And to be honest, because of the way the funding is in the UK, I think Vic was saying earlier, it gets 2.6% of the funding for cancer goes to children. And unfortunately, it's a numbers game. They estimate only about 1,800 kids a year get diagnosed with cancer. And that's just not a government priority.
Well, of course, in the United States, it's around 15,000 kids a year get diagnosed with cancer. The United States is a bigger place. Mm-hmm. And 4% of the funding for cancer goes for children. So my guess is percentage-wise, it's probably a bigger percentage of the kids in England that get the money, 2.6 versus 4, but of course there are so many less kids treated. Regardless, it's too little. Whether you're in the United States or England or anywhere else. And it's just unfortunate that things can't be looked at. I understand it's a business, but you know, you have a situation here with Rio and others, of course, mm-hmm. That could benefit from some training by MSK and the others. But if it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. But yeah, it's just too bad that you have to go through this whole, you know, expense just to try to make things easier for you. And I'd like to talk a little bit about your older daughter and Rio's mm-hmm. older sister, Lily Rose, who has certainly been affected by her little brother's cancer treatment. First of all, she looks several years older than Rio. She's a beautiful girl. And can you talk about now, obviously she's been affected because you talked about the twitch that she had in her neck, mm-hmm. which I'm guessing is an anxiety issue.
PTSD.
How is she doing, and how difficult has it been for her?
It's been awful. So for Lily Rose has always been a very emotional, wears her heart on her sleeve, family-orientated girl. Like, she's super, super close to all of her family. And Rio was a longed-for brother. So I had a difficult delivery with Lily Rose, and I had 3 surgeries to have Rio. And I got told I shouldn't be able to have had him. I had my left tube and ovary removed, and my chances of having Rio was very slim. And he was my little miracle baby. 4 weeks after I had my left tube and ovary removed, I fell pregnant with Rio. And we waited until it was safe, and we told Lily Rose, and because she asked for Santa for a baby brother for years. And I had to explain to her, it's not that simple. Santa can't give you these. Mummy's got tummy issues. Her brother came along, and she was the bestest sister in the world. Like, it was her wish come true. And even when he had glue ear and he was struggling, like she was just such a hands-on sister. And I think the reason why Lily Rose is struggling so much is because he was in hospital. And I said to her, once they kept telling me cancer's not an option, that it's a blocked kidney, I said, don't worry, it's a simple fix. We're like, we'll be out soon. I know it's our summers, but we will get Rio better and we'll be back home. And then when we told her he had cancer, I think how I felt towards the medical system or how they let me down, equally I let her down, because one minute he was better, one minute it's a blocked kidney. Now I'm so sorry, darling, your brother's got cancer. And it came with a whole lot of issues. So obviously when he's immunosuppressed, I didn't want her to miss out on schooling, mixing with her friends. So she moved in with my sister when we had to do the 70 days of chemo, and she'd come back and forth. But then when we was in St. George's for his surgery, she couldn't be with us. And then high dose, we did the 9 weeks. And finally, now she's back home fully with us, because next part of treatment isn't as vulnerable for Rio, radiation and immunotherapy. But her life changed as much as Rio's on that day. And I just don't think there's enough support out there for siblings. Do you know, even though she's not going through the cancer journey, her life changed forever. Do you know, and well, I think especially with girls, they're very more emotionally switched on. So she would ask me questions that I'd have to answer because I didn't want her to research it online. Say, mummy, doesn't stage four mean like Rio's very poorly? And I said, yes, of course. And she's like, but mummy, you're going to fix him. And you've got to promise me my brother won't die. And just a lot of awkward questions. And she kept researching. She's like, but isn't neuroblastoma rare, mummy? So why did my brother get it? And then she'd say, why did Santa and God give me a baby brother, my wish come true, then give him glue ear and then give him cancer? Why, mummy? What have we done wrong? So she holds a lot of anxiety. And I think that's what caused her to get the PTSD twitch in her neck. And for her, I can't answer all her questions.
You called her questions heartbreaking, and they are heartbreaking, yeah. You know, just to have to answer questions like that. At any age, but particularly, you know, a young girl who is, you know, trying to understand what in the heck is going on, you know, with her little brother. Has she been able at this point to have at least a somewhat normal life as far as going to school and being able to keep a normal schedule?
We made sure that none of that changed. So, I mean, she's equally as close to us, because I grew up, my mum and dad and my sister, we are very close family. We all live down the same road. So with my sister, my daughter already had a bedroom there, and at my mum and dad's, my daughter had a bedroom there. So when we were doing inpatient stays, she'd stay at my mum and dad's or my sister's, where she already had her bedroom, so that she could have her friends round. My mum and dad took her to Paris for us when our stay got extended when he got VOD, because my mum and dad wanted to distract her, you know, and give her some special time. Why? We were going through what we was going through with Rio's treatment, so that she didn't realize our stay got extended because of a complication. We just wanted her to know that it was just his ongoing treatment. We try and keep as much of the bad stuff away from her so that her life's as normal. But for Lily Rose, all she wanted to be is at home with her brother. So
how old is she?
9.
At 9 years old, you were able to understand,
you know, too much.
It's going to say a lot of things, and things that you really, as I said before, you know, you don't want to need to understand this, of course, in anything like normal circumstances, which this certainly is not.
There's not support there for the siblings. There's just not. We resourced counseling for her. But if I was to have cancer, or my husband was to have cancer, there's counseling for children with their families going through it. But on sibling, there's a lack of support for children. And I think they should be acknowledged as much, because one, Rio's as important to Lily Rose as he is to me. Two, her life got turned upside down. And even when, like, we try and keep home life as normal as possible, but sometimes she will come up to me and go, mummy, she's like, I know you're worried. And I'm like, no, of course mummy's not. Mummy will make sure Rio beats this. But you know, she was like, but mummy, I can see since Rio's diagnosis, your eyes, you're just sad all the time. Do you know? So she deals with a lot. And I think siblings should get more support for that aspect.
siblings is a huge problem, not only in England, but in the United States. And it's the most unsung, or one of the most unsung parts of the so-called psychosocial aspect of pediatric cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that this is a problem, particularly in a situation where there's the backburner syndrome, in which, because the parents have to concentrate on the child with cancer, you know, mm-hmm. the other children can get left.
100%.
And that's a problem. But it sounds like, you know, Lily Rose is doing as well as possible. And there's
guilty. Because for me, I've always given both my children equal amount of time, and I can't do that now. Do you know? So, like, we have to do Rio's medicines. We have to do his feeds down his tubes. We have to, if he spikes the temperature of 38, we have to dash off to hospital, and that's a 2-night admission until the cultures come back. So there is, even though she's home and we try and give her as much attention as possible, because that's what she deserves too, no matter how much we try, it's never going to be what it was prior diagnosis, because Rio does require more attention. And I can understand how siblings struggle with that, because, like, we try and clarify to her all the time, it doesn't mean we love you any less. We care for you. And if you was unfortunate that you had Rio's diagnosis and Rio didn't, you'd have the same impact and care from mummy and daddy and everyone else. It's just, it's very hard to find that medium balance, you know, because you are their full-time carers.
Are there other people outside of you and Dawn that can explain or do explain this situation to Lily Rose? It sounds as if she probably understands it as best as any 9-year-old can.
Mm-hmm. She had counseling and she went to therapy every Wednesday. My family have explained it to her quite well. We have. I was hoping to find a support group for siblings, and I thought it'd be nice for them, all siblings, no matter what oncology it is or what pediatric cancer. But I just can't seem to resource a group here, because I thought it'd be nice for the siblings to have a day where they all go out in a church group or something, where they can just all express how they're feeling and know they're not alone. And but there's just nothing around.
Very unfortunate to hear. I'd like to ask you about solving kids' cancer.
They're incredible.
Children, they're a very dedicated children's cancer charity located in England, fortunately mm-hmm. near you. And fortunately near you is also the fact that they have a particular focus on neuroblastoma.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the overall mission of this charity and how it has affected you so far?
Personally, I think they're incredible. My trust and faith in them as a charity is, I would not have believed I could have trusted someone this much. Their effort and their impact and their fight and dedication to neuroblastoma is incredible. Half of the workers have been personally affected, so I feel like they have the passion and the drive. They are constantly fighting for better treatment. They are trying to get, there's another, if Rio was micking or out, there's another drug for maintenance called DMFO in America, and they are trying their hardest to get it approved in England. They hold yearly conferences worldwide for neuroblastoma with neuroblastoma specialists and professors, scientists. Their support on the end of the phone. They are just an incredible charity.
Now, they're involved with fundraising. My question is, you need $300,000, hopefully, mm-hmm. to be able to come to New York for mm-hmm. the treatment. Do they involve themselves in that, and have they been a help to you of raising money and raising awareness to what your personal situation is?
No. So we do the campaigns and we do the fundraising events.
And how have those gone so far?
To be honest, my sister, the person I should give all the credit to,
she dedicates her whole life to Rio's campaign. So all our posters, all our events, my sister arranges. Like, she is incredible. Not only is she incredible with how she looked after my daughter when we was in isolation and in treatment, but she's equally, like, we are very blessed to have the family we have around us. Like, my sister has a full-time job and had my daughter, and she runs all these events. And she's constantly thinking off the board on how to do other events, do posters, do banners. Like, she's amazing.
And as sort of an adjunct to that, have you had a lot of support outside of your sister and your immediate family from the community that you live in? And have they been some sort of a source of comfort for you as you've gone
100%.
Through
them? Well, we live in a small village, and everyone has been incredible support for Rio, for Lily Rose, for our campaign. Their care, their effort has been beautiful, to be fair. And especially when you're going through this journey and you see how many selfless, caring people there is that generally are rooting and fighting for your son, it sends a nice feeling to your heart of humanity.
Now, the Children's Cancer Charity sponsors a Parent Global Symposium.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were 1,450 people that came last year. Maybe there was this year to it. There were 1,350 the year before.
Last year, I watched it.
Have you gone to any of the events that they have? And if so, have you been able to meet other parents who are fighting the same neuroblastoma battle that you are, and ones that you can confide in and relate to?
Yeah. So the neuroblastoma community, we all comfort each other, and we all have met through Solving Kids Cancer, quite a lot of us. So especially on social media, there's a lot of neuroblastoma families, and we all reach out to each other for advice on treatment, because every child responds differently. And some of them wanting to fundraise for GMFO if they're MICing or out-camplified, or for, like, for ourselves. We've just witnessed two children go to New York for the bivalent vaccine.
Well, that must have been, you know, it would have been very nice if Rio had been able to go, but he's not ready for that yet. But that must have been a message to you that, you know, this thing could really happen.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'll make sure he gets to America.
I have no doubt about that. Now, as it stands right now, I know April 2nd begins another phase of mm-hmm. what he's doing. What are Rio's doctors saying about how he is doing? And are you confident, and it sounds like you are, that mm-hmm. every single treatment possible will be given to Rio, and that the care he is under will lead first to a remission and then a cure?
So I hope so. I couldn't be any more proud of how Rio's responded to treatment. So Rio's, for induction chemotherapy, he went from 27 spots of metastasis down to one. His tumor went from 12x7 centimeters down to 4 centimeters. His bone marrow completely cleared, wasn't it, Don? His bone marrow was covered and it cleared. And we managed to keep his kidney, which normally in neuroblastoma, you lose the kidney. We lost Rio's adrenal gland, but we managed to keep his kidney. So Rio's response was very good. Equally, I don't like to get carried away with myself, because I know this is a beast of a disease, and each phase of treatment responds differently to each part of the cancer journey. So for me, until I get to the end of immunotherapy and Rio has no evidence of disease and I can get on that plane and get Rio to MSK Kids, then I will feel comfortable.
Well, it looks as if you're on your way there. And I guess each day that comes gets you closer to the goal. I know you have a ways to go yet. Is Dawn still here as well?
Yep, Don's here.
I'd like to thank you for taking care of Rio during this period.
That's all right.
I'd like to ask both of you this last question, and I guess I'm gonna start with Dawn on this. How have the last 15 months or so changed you?
I'll start on this.
I'm not the most emotional person to begin with. I used to come from quite a heavy faith background, being from Ireland, being brought up by the Catholic Church. And everything I've seen over the last sort of 15 months has taken all that away, if I'm honest.
Has your perspective of life changed quite a bit?
The easiest way I can describe it is that death has got to be easy because life is this hard.
Well, you know, I can't imagine anything being harder, obviously, than what you're going through. Vicky, how would you answer that question?
For me, I wasn't actually that religious to start off with, but I have to find a reasoning for everything. And for me, there's no reasoning for children to get cancer full stop, because obviously it's not environmental. Rio didn't have it from, because neuroblastoma can be grown from being in your womb, from a nerve. He didn't have that. So for me, there was no logical reason. So I am opposite to Don. I believe, this is going to sound crazy, Rio's got it because I want to fight for pediatric cancers for the rest of my life, for better treatment. So I'm hoping I'm right in believing what I believe, but I believe Rio's got here to prove how you can beat this disease as well, thrive, be strong, and it not define you and it just be a part of your chapter of your life, but it will go on forward to make him stronger for the future.
You are not the only parent that has said this. And it certainly makes a lot of sense. And so far, he's doing exactly what you want him to do.
Oh, honestly, Mark, he blows them away even in the hospital. So his protocol of his induction chemo is called rapid Kojak, and it's meant to knock you for six. But Rio, I mean, he went six rounds without even needing a platelet transfusion. He tolerates his person, like he is just smiling and happy 24/7, regardless what is chucked at him, he just takes it. Do you know, his determination and his fight for life is incredible and so empowering. Like, he is genuinely incredible. And for me, how can we feel so sorry for ourselves when, one, we're not going through it, we're watching our son go through it, and two, when Rio has such fight? Do you know, and if deep in my heart, do I believe he's going to beat it 100%? Do you know, it'll take more than cancer to knock that boy down. That's what I truthfully believe.
Well, I can tell by the look on your face and the way you said that, you absolutely believe that 100%. I just want to ask you this question. And if you don't want to answer it, I understand. But the local hospital that he went to, did they ever feel that they did it? Do you think that they ever felt that they did anything that they shouldn't have done? And did you get any kind of comment or apology for what transpired there? Or maybe they felt that it wasn't
apology.
Necessary?
An apology.
An apology.
And they said Rio will be their lesson.
Well, okay. It turned out that he went to, first of all, St. George's, then to the oncology hospital. So he went a step up each time, first of all, to get the care that he needed, the surgery and everything, and then the real treatment. And if it gave them a lesson, then maybe the next person that goes
thing. For me, there has to be a positive out of everything. So if another child doesn't go through that, amazing. And also my positive, where it happened so early on in Rio's treatment, I don't trust anyone, so I make sure Rio's care is ruled by me. And it sounds arrogant, but I don't care if they're a consultant, a specialist. I double check and I triple check. And if I don't feel comfortable, something doesn't happen.
Well, you certainly have the right idea about that. And the fact is, you just said that Rio is here because he had the cancer that's going to make a difference. Well, apparently he's already made a difference in this local hospital, who say that they've learned their lesson, which would be
and
very,
I hope
very
so.
Good.
Because I would hate for other parents to go through and experience what we experienced through. We experienced, but we never gave up. But that's our personalities, and we're not intimidated by professionals or their, what's the word, their credibility or their, or yes. So whereas somebody else could have said, okay, and took their child home, do you know? But fortunately for us, that was never going to be an option. If I think something's not wrong with my child, I will stand there and say it till I'm blue in my face until something gets happened.
Where can people get in touch with you? Now, you've got a $300,000 bill at some point staring at you with the face. Their money has to be raised. So if people are interested in helping you, and I hope they are, where do they find you?
So on Rio's Instagram page, Rio versus neuroblastoma, in my bio is the link directly to Solving Kids Cancer. So we didn't do a GoFundMe page. We raised the money and it goes to Solving Kids Cancer. And then they hold the money and then send it to MSK Kids. So we didn't want to do a GoFundMe page that we would have. The only money we want to fundraise for is Rio's treatment.
As we come to the end of this podcast, first of all, thank you for taking the time to come on my show. You being 4 hours away from me, which I don't think we knew until yesterday, turned out fine. And, you know, I want to congratulate you for coming this far, you know, with Rio.
Thank you.
It seems like he's doing, you know, as well as he can. And I want to wish you the best of luck, the best of health to Rio and Lily Rose and both of you as time
thank
goes on.
You.
And thank you again for coming onto my show.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm sorry I was a little bit absent, but I had my hands full.
Well, you did have your hands full, although Rio and I could have had a perfectly good conversation during the podcast, and he did make an appearance, and he looked terrific. And that to see how good he looked really made my day. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mark. I can't thank you enough for your time.
Thank you.
Once again, we have heard an unfortunate story of doctors who do not seem to listen when the mother of an ill child is doing what she can to make sure that the caregivers of this very young child have done everything possible to make certain that what they are saying about a child's illness is based on as much evidence as possible. Thankfully, this child, named Rio, has been very well taken care of since his transfer from one hospital to a much larger one, and the hope is that Rio is on his way to a successful recovery from this very difficult form of stage 4 neuroblastoma. This is Mark Levine, and please tune in on Monday when I will speak with Tabitha Odom, who will talk about her daughter, Sailor, who was diagnosed with B-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia in the fall of 2022, and how she is doing today.